up, Sassenachs. It's Chelsea back for another episode of the Sassenach Files. This week, we are discussing all of the deleted, extended, and additional scenes from Season 4. But before we get to that, I want to take a moment to remind you that you can find the Sassenach Files on all sorts of streaming platforms, including iTunes, CastBox, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. Also, if you have not had a chance yet, make sure you head over to follow the Sassenach Files on both Facebook and Instagram to make sure you are up to date on all of the latest and greatest news concerning Outlander Seasons 7 and 8, as well as Blood of My Blood, Men in Kilts, and anything Diana Gabaldon cooks up. And with all of that out of the way, let's get into my analysis of all of the deleted, extended, and additional scenes from Season 4. Scene that we are going to discuss is an Outlander Untold, and we got our first Outlander Untold in the Season 3 material whenever we saw the proposal between John and Isabel. This is something that I think went over really well with fans, so they decided to make this a regular thing throughout Season 4. So we have quite a few Outlander Untolds to get through today, but the first one is a scene where young Ian wins Rollo. And this is something that whenever they were breaking down the episodes for filming and stuff, it was a scene that a lot of people thought would be interesting to show, but it wasn't something that they necessarily had time to cover in the 50 minutes to an hour episode that is the Season 4 premiere. There was a lot of things that needed to be set up. When we're talking about the structure of a premiere episode, it sets the trajectory for the rest of the season. So these little side scenes don't necessarily always find a home in their correct episode. And so that's where the concept of Outlander Untold was born. In the episode, we get the scene of Jamie and Claire walking up to the Ordinary and Ian is sitting outside with this dog. Jamie and Claire are like, where did this dog come from, you know? And he said, I want him, lucky roll of the dice, so I named him Rollo. And I think it's an interesting scene for a lot of reasons. It gives us a chance to see Ian in a new light. I think for Ian as a character, the transition from Season 3 to Season 4 is a very big one. He matured a lot after the things that happened to him in Season 3. This is really the first time that we get that. We see that steeliness starting to evolve out of Ian's character whenever he's staring down these sailors who are trying to intimidate him. He knows that he's in the right. He knows he's going to win. So he puffs up his chest. We see a little bit of that Fraser confidence in him. This scene shows the birth of Ian that we know that eventually evolves into this fierce Mohawk warrior. So to see that kind of start here over his dog, who is just so sweet. Can we talk a minute about how when Ian goes over to the dog after he's spent his last coin, he just goes to pet the dog and the dog puts his paw up on him and rolls over like, yes, please rub my belly. If you've seen any of the behind the scenes material on the dogs that play Rollo, they originally got two puppies and raised them with this show in mind. The dog that ended up playing Rollo, his name is McDew, or Dewey for short. He is the sweetest dog ever, which is extremely ironic considering Rollo in the books is crotchety, mean, he growls at everybody. Rollo is Ian's best bud and everybody else's chump change in the books, and Dewey just loves everybody. So in that respect, they didn't necessarily get a dog that would growl on cue and things like that. He's more happy-go-lucky, and that's why we see a much different version of Rollo in the show than we see in the books. This scene showcases a bit of growth. It's very interesting. It kind of gives us the unfolding of a story that we only got glimpses of in the premiere. And also something fun about this scene is it took an entire day to shoot, but John Gary Steele and his crew created an entirely new set for this one Outlander Untold scene that was never meant to make it into the show. It was filmed exclusively for the DVD and Blu-ray watchers. So I just find it so incredible that the set designers and his team put the same amount of work into this scene that was only going to be for this one particular moment on the Blu-ray and DVD that he would put into the scene that they were switching over outside to film in Wilmington on the main street. The next scene is from 403, The False Bride. It's just a little blip of a scene called the Kaylee Dance, and it's one that I'm actually really sad was cut. It's very quick, but it's the moment where Roger and Bree are actually doing the Kaylee that they had hinted at wanting to do when they're at the Scottish Festival at Grandfather Mountain. They're dancing, and they bonk heads, and then it flashes to them sitting off to the side with Bree icing her head, and they have this really cute moment where they kiss. I'm never going to be on the side of cutting material for Roger and Bree in a season that was arguably very poorly done when we're talking about their stories, because I feel like we need to see that bonding between Roger and Bree, and we just didn't see that as much as we could have and should have, in my opinion. Ron Moore says they cut this scene because it didn't feel like the right place to have Roger and Bree's first kiss, which does not compute because they kiss in the car on the way to the Scottish Festival. Bree leans over and kisses Roger, and he almost swerves off the road. So that is not their first kiss at the Kaylee. I feel like it's more of a stepping stone to the big fight that we have at the end of this episode that ultimately results in their breakup. We needed a bit more of the restructuring of their relationship, because this is where we're picking up with Roger and Bree in season 4. We haven't seen them since Freedom and Whiskey in season 3, and we need a little bit of that extra in building their relationship so that we can understand where they're both coming from at the end of this episode with their big fight. It doesn't make sense for the fight to be as up in arms as it is. It doesn't make sense for Roger to be proposing to her so soon, it feels like, when we haven't really kept touch with them throughout the rest of season 3 and first couple episodes of season 4. For me personally, I feel like this scene needed to be there. Roger and Bree needed the extra character development for the rest of this episode to make sense contextually, so I don't agree with this choice to cut it. The next scene we have to talk about is the second Outlander Untold of season 4 between Lord John and William. It takes place at the beginning of 406, Blood of My Blood. And it actually takes place prior to where Blood of My Blood opens up. And this is when John and William are on their way to Fraser's Ridge. I really love this scene. I'm finding that my favorite Outlander Untolds are scenes where we expand on John's character. We get so little of him in the show compared to what we get in the books. I mean, there's a whole world that Diana has created around John, which, side note, if you have not had a chance to read those yet and you read the books, it's a must read. They're so good. And it really helps you understand John's character in the big books. But that's a whole other thing. I could go on and on about the Lord John series. This scene between Lord John and William really helps us to understand what their relationship looks like. We haven't seen John since the season finale of season 3. And we haven't seen William since about the halfway point of season 3. It's probably been about 7 years since Jamie has seen William at this point. It's a great opportunity for us to see these characters in a stepping stone. Creating this episode in the Sassenach Files allows us to really get a good feel for the arc of John and William in particular as we progress through season 7. So I'm really glad that we're talking about this scene today. I'm just so excited for where we're going to go in 7B with William and John. And I think it's really important for us to understand the relationship that they have as father and son. In this scene in season 4, William and John have just recently lost Isabel. And William is very strongly grieving for his mother. He feels like John isn't grieving her in the same way, and I think that's confusing for him. He also feels a bit of resentment. He feels like John didn't love her the same way that he did, which is likely true. You know, we find out later in this episode, Blood of My Blood, that John doesn't grieve for Isabel in the same way that a husband is expected to grieve for his wife, primarily because he's in love with Jamie. That's the great love of his life. And so losing Isabel was painful. But I think for John, it's the pain of losing a friend and also the pain of watching his son lose his mother. So yeah, for William, that dynamic is a bit confusing. And we see that come out in this Outlander Untold. But also we see how fantastic a father John is to William. We see him imparting wisdom on William in a way where he talks about sacrifice and courage and how those two things take many shapes and forms. It's about not always doing what's gratifying or what feels right, because loving someone and doing what is best for them takes priority over what is best for you sometimes. William really respects John, and we see that dynamic in how this is played. This scene was actually directed by Matt Roberts, and you can always tell when an episode is directed by somebody that really gets the story and gets the characters, and I feel like that bleeds over into this Outlander Untold scene, because Matt does understand these characters in a way that some writers and directors just don't. That, I think, is why this scene was so great. This was also Danielle Barrow's foot in the pool of writing episodes for Outlander. This is the first thing that she really sunk her teeth into for the Outlander universe, and then from there, she started writing episodes in season 5, 6, and 7. So this was a great opening performance for her, as far as I'm concerned, because I felt like this was a really well-written scene. But seeing that dynamic between John and William, seeing how much William respects John, that definitely bleeds over into the relationship that we see in season 7 when we start to get a look at William and John just in that brief snippet we get in 702. We're definitely going to explore it later on as we get into 7B, like I said. Seeing how much John loves William, that decision to marry Isabel was predicated on him helping raise William. He realized William having a mother and a father was what was best for him, and especially if Jamie wasn't going to be in his life, that was a good direction to go. And Jamie felt confident leaving William in John's charge because he knew that he would be a good father to him and he would teach him how to be a man and teach him the ways of the world. William is an earl. For better or worse, he was born an earl, and John was the best placed person to teach him how to be an earl. At this point in William's life, he would rather be in England, rather be around family and what is comfortable. He blames John a lot for the loss of his mother because in his mind, if Isabel hadn't gotten on that ship to come join John in the Americas, she never would have gotten sick. She never would have died. So that's a confusing thing for him to deal with as well. But through this conversation with John, we start to see him realize John has made sacrifices for William. I love that we see William acknowledge that and talk about how courageous he is to put his dreams on hold to raise William and be there for him. John is able to reciprocate that and say, I want you to understand nothing is more important than you in my life. Like, I love you more than life itself. That for me is so touching, to see this relationship between John and William, this mythical relationship that for so much of this series we hear John talk about with Jamie. Every time we see John in an episode until season 7, from this point on, William is just out there somewhere in the universe. He's just this mythical figure. And John is always like, oh, William's doing well. William's at school. William's doing this, that, or the other. And we know that that relationship exists, but we don't have a chance to see it and like really get into the gritty details. And that's why I love this scene so much. And I have my fingers and toes crossed that eventually, when we get new episodes, we will get to see that relationship with Charles Vandervaart as William, because he's phenomenal, and I just want so badly to see that interaction between father and son. This next scene is also from 406, Blood of My Blood. A lot of these scenes are just so wonderful, and they were all cut for time. It's so unfortunate that the best episodes are always the ones that have the best deleted scenes. But that's why we buy the Blu-ray and DVDs, so that we can see them and watch them over and over again. And this scene, I'm Not Afraid of Blood, is a beautiful little snippet from William and Claire. They're outside having a discussion while she's cleaning his wounds, and Murta, John, and Jamie are speaking in the cabin. So in this scene, she's just being so tender towards William. She's tucking his hair behind his ears and taking care of him in a very motherly way. And when she does tuck his hair behind his ears and like straighten his bangs, he says, "I've lost my ribbon," and is very worried because he's not organized and everything's not in its proper place and he's not appearing as a gentleman would appear. And she looks at him and says, "It's all right. I'll lend you one." It's just this wonderful bond. This episode really is William imprinting on Claire so that later on in season 7, when he meets her again, he knows who she is instantly. Looking back on this episode, I think it's a great one to rewatch in your preparation for 7B. So keep that in mind, because it really does show a lot of the relationships forming that we get more of as the series progresses. Our last deleted scene from Blood of My Blood is a scene called Advice from a Dying Man. And this scene, I don't think I have ever seen before, so it was a treat for me to watch. It is between John and Murta. There is a little snippet between Claire and Murta. It's the middle of the night while Jamie is out with Willie trying to keep him occupied since John is sick. Claire is exhausted, so Murta agrees to take over a little bit and take care of John. And so it proceeds to a scene between Murta and John, two characters that, for all intents and purposes, do not like each other. So it's a very interesting dynamic watching their conversations and watching Murta care for John. From his standpoint, Jamie has put his foot down and kind of said, "This guy is taking care of my illegitimate son. He's a good man. Lay off of it." So from there, I think Murta is willing to give him a little bit more grace in that respect. John proves Jamie right in this scene. He doesn't have any reason to be nice to Murta. And instead of coming after him with all sorts of reasons why he should be shitty and tell Murta he's making the wrong decisions, he goes about it in that John way, where he said, "Politics don't seem so important now." He points out to Murta that he spent most of his life serving his country, and I think that putting that into perspective gives Murta a little bit more respect for him. He's a soldier, and yeah, he might be the opposition, but he's spent most of his life serving his country, and what more honorable profession is there? John knows the climate politically. He's very well connected with Governor Tryon and a lot of the nobility that are serving as governors in America at this point in time. So he's very well aware of the regulator movement. He tells Murta there are more pressing matters elsewhere, so attentions are not necessarily here in the colonies. And Murta says that might be a mistake. And John says, "No, they're just biding their time. You need to be careful here and take advice from a dying man. You should move to Fraser's Ridge and be with your family." Looking at that in hindsight and what happens in season 5, that's a really heartbreaking piece of advice. But that is all to say that this scene between John and Murta is a very honest look at both of these men and how they fit together outside of Jamie. So the next scene we have is called Are You Alone? It's from 407 Down the Rabbit Hole. I'm of two minds about this because I understand why Ron Moore cut it. He said he couldn't get the cut to work right. It was supposed to convey that Brianna was robbed of everything that she brought with her through the stones, and that's why she was so unprepared, and that's why she ended up being rescued by Leary. I get what he's saying, because you never actually see the travelers that she's riding with take her stuff, and it doesn't really seem like it was enough time passing when she falls in the wagon for them to take everything. And then after she gets off the wagon, she realizes that everything's gone, but by that point, it's too late. They're already gone. So I almost wish that they had gone back and done reshoots on this versus cutting it, because one of my biggest issues, and I know book readers in general, one of their biggest issues with this episode was how unprepared Brianna was coming through the stones. It just made her seem really aloof and stupid and not thinking things through. And that's just not Brianna. If you know Brianna from the books, she's very smart, very capable, always prepared. That just did not jive. Whenever you watch this episode down the rabbit hole, she seems so unprepared and so almost stupid. I feel like if you had seen her come through the stones prepared versus what we actually get in the locked cut of this episode, it makes it completely different. I understand why Ron cut it, but like I said, I feel like it would have been better for them to do reshoots and focus in on somebody taking her stuff and slipping it in their pockets or whatever, so that we know that she was robbed and that's why she didn't have what she needed to survive, instead of leaning heavily on the, oh, we'll just act like she didn't have it to begin with, because that is really a detriment to her character, in my opinion. The next scene is also from Down the Rabbit Hole. It's called There's Power in a Name, and it is between Roger and Fiona. Again, this scene is one that has a lot of book material that we missed in the episode. I feel like for some reason, season 4 was the season that they chose to cut all the book crap and keep all the created content, and I don't know that that's a good move on the showrunner's part. There was a massive disconnect in where the characters were from season 3 to season 5 because of all the weird stuff that was going on in season 4. And this scene, There's Power in a Name, is a prime example of that. It has a lot to do with the mythology of the stones and time travel in general, because this is the scene where Roger was kicked back out of the stones. He went through the first time thinking of his father instead of Brianna, and for a brief moment, he saw Jerry, but then the stones spat him back out. That happened in the book a lot more violently, and he literally almost died. But the concept is still there, and it does show that the stones are not a revolving door. Things can go wrong. That is something that we really miss from the show, I think, that stakes that's added to that part of the mythology. And I really wish we would have gotten that in this episode, Down the Rabbit Hole. I also feel like it's great because it shows Brianna's time down the rabbit hole, and it also shows Roger going after her. So it is kind of a through line for both of their characters in that respect. It's also a really great moment between Roger and Fiona, but I understand why this scene was cut, because Roger and Fiona's relationship is not necessarily something that we spend a lot of time focusing on, and it's not one of those things that fans are itching for more of. So in that respect, it was probably an easy thing to cut that wasn't really tied down to a lot of things when we're talking about an episode running long for time. But I feel like it was valid to keep if they had been able to have it in the locked cut, just because it helps viewers understand the stones a little bit more and the concept of time travel within the Outlander universe. There weren't any deleted scenes for the next few episodes, and the next one that we come to that has some stuff attached to it is The Deep Heart's Core, which was an interesting episode. It's not one of my favorites. Luke Skelhaas wrote this, and generally speaking, he's not one of my favorite writers for the show. His voice in his writing comes across a bit odd, in my opinion, and that was largely based off of my first experience with an episode that he wrote, which is The Deep Heart's Core in season 4. Now, with that being said, when we take this episode and break it apart and look at how it was originally structured versus how the story ended up being told, I back off of that a little bit, because the first scene that was deleted from this episode is called I Was Overcome with Anger. And this is originally how The Deep Heart's Core was supposed to open up. It was deleted from this episode and things were moved around in context. The episode's locked cut tells a much different story from how this episode was originally written. The scene is where Jamie comes back to the cabin after beating the holy hell out of Roger. Claire mistakes his injury for beating someone up as him hitting a tree, because that is what happened back in season one. So it's a nice little callback to that moment between Jamie and Claire where Jamie was arguing with Dougal and he starts punching a tree because he can't hit Dougal. But it also shows Claire likely found out about Stephen Bonnet in the time where Jamie was already gone at the still. And so the way things overlapped, even if Claire had been honest with Jamie about Stephen Bonnet being the one that raped Brianna, that would not have saved Roger. What it could have potentially done, he could have gone after Ian and found him before Roger was sold to the Mohawk. It could have saved them a lot of trouble in the long term, but it wouldn't have saved Roger from being beat up by Jamie. It's very interesting because I feel like this scene between Jamie and Claire gives the whole episode a different context because there was that opportunity for honesty there between the two of them. It also gives us something to refer back to later on in the episode when Claire is pissed at Jamie for not telling her what happened. And she said, "You told me you hit a tree." If she had been honest in that moment and he had been honest in that moment, then things would have turned out a lot differently. But because they both chose to keep the truth to themselves, it opened things up for a lot more problems. The way that they restructured things kind of made it seem like Claire found out about Stephen Bonnet before Jamie beat up Roger and all of that, when in reality they were likely happening simultaneously. Nonetheless, this was a great little moment between Jamie and Claire. It allows the audience to see how much they're both struggling with what happened to their daughter, giving voice to their feelings. Jamie saying, "I don't quite know how I feel, to be honest." And Claire saying, "Angry, heartbroken, just awful, helpless." Those aren't feelings that Jamie and Claire are accustomed to feeling. It really is a moment where they're trying to seek comfort in each other, but they're both going through so much. And that dishonesty between the two of them is creating even more separation between them in this moment. They can both tell there's something that each other's not telling the other person. It's a great dynamic. Sam and Katrina, as always, are awesome. They just know their characters so well and are able to convey so much with so little screen time. So I understand why this was cut. Some of it did feel a little bit clunky in the writing, but I feel like it gives us more light shed on other elements of this episode that seemed a bit confusing. The next scene is a brief one from the Deepheart's Court as well, between Murta and Jocasta right after Murta arrives to River Run with Brianna. This is a really cute scene, but I do agree it was easy to lift out of the episode just because it reiterates quite a bit of material that's already covered within the scope of the story. It's Murta explaining to Jocasta why Brianna was kept a secret, what the story is there. It does give us a timestamp in that 3 months has passed between when Brianna met Jamie and Claire in Wilmington versus now when she's showing up at River Run. So 3 months has passed between the Birds and the Bees and the Deepheart's Core, which is very interesting to note. I mean, I guess technically we knew that, but the thing about Outlander as a show is that time passes at such a weird speed. You'll have one episode that takes place over a couple of days, and then you'll have an episode that takes place over a couple of months. So it's just really odd how time passes in this universe. And even people that have read the books don't really note the time passing. But I really liked this scene because Jocasta is asking Murta if Brianna takes after her mother. And I find this very interesting given how Jocasta left things with Claire. They really butt heads, did not agree with how things were handled on either end. Jocasta expressed her feelings to Claire that Jamie was not living up to his full potential because he loved Claire and Claire didn't want to stay. So Jocasta does not have a very high opinion of Claire at this point in the story. And so she's asking, does Brianna take after Claire? Or does she take after Jamie? And Murta says she's willful, stubborn, ungovernable. She's a Fraser through and through. I loved that. The last scene that was cut from the Deepheart's Core is really a series of shots of Murta leaving River Run. It's literally called Leaving River Run. And I'm realizing as I'm watching all of these deleted scenes that Murta never actually leaves anywhere in the final cuts. They just let it happen off screen and they cut everything of him actually leaving. I also wondered to myself, because in this scene he leaves with a single horse and his gun slung over his shoulder, whereas whenever they left Fraser's Ridge, he had a wagon and everything. So I'm assuming they're just leaving it at River Run. He is going after Stephen Bonnet at this point in the story, so it makes sense that he would want to travel light, I guess. But all of these questions that I have watching this little scene, so I'm kind of glad they cut it because it probably would have drove me nuts. The reason that they put this in the deleted scenes is so that we as the viewers could see what the computer graphics team does after a scene is cut. We get the wide shot of River Run with the actual house. The first level is built as a practical set, and then the second story is actually blue screen that they fill in with computer graphics after everything is cut. It's just interesting to see the little things that nobody realizes even is a thing. Our computer graphics team for Outlander most of the time is really great. It's just whenever you get those huge landscapes that are painted in that it starts to look fake. River Run is a prime example. We never would have known that part of that was CGI'd if we hadn't got this scene. The next episode from season 4 that is an Outlander Untold scene is called Unwanted House Guests, and it features Marcelie and Myrta as they ward off some unwanted house guests. Marcelie has defended herself against unwanted advances from the landlord's brother. He and his brother come seeking double rent or they'll be out on their behinds, and Myrta helps Marcelie defend herself and make the landlord see that it was, in fact, his brother that was the cause of all of the hubbub going on. It was nice to see Marcelie. Lauren Lyle is fantastic, as always. And it's really good to see Myrta in more of that fatherly role that we have for so long seen him with Jamie and Claire. And that translates over into the younger generation with Marcelie and Fergus as well. It was a really cute scene. I really enjoy that set from Marcelie and Fergus's Wilmington apartment. This wasn't one of my favorite Outlander Untold scenes just because it wasn't really relevant to anything that we were seeing in the story. It wasn't even legitimately a side story like the Lord John and William stuff was. The final Outlander Untold scene of season 4 comes from the penultimate episode of the season, Providence. And it is called T42. This is actually a really interesting scene between Lizzie, Phaedra, Ulysses, and Jocasta. Lizzie and Phaedra are bickering back and forth. They both want priority in Brianna's life, I feel like. And so they're constantly trying to outdo each other and point the finger at each other. And this is a really good example of that because there's leftover tea and cake from an earlier gathering. So Phaedra catches Lizzie trying the cake, and then Lizzie is like, well, I might be eating the leftover cake, but you were trying on Brianna's hat earlier. So they just go back and forth on this for a long while. And finally, Ulysses and Jocasta come in and are the perfect example of a wise voice of reason. And Jocasta really gets her time to shine as somebody who has been there, done that, is kind of like a motherly figure in a way, which is kind of a surprising take on it, given that she's Phaedra's owner. One thing that we see that I hadn't really noticed before was that Lizzie and Phaedra are both wearing the color palette for the River Run servants, which is this like mustardy brown color with a charcoal gray skirt. They're a little bit different because Lizzie is wearing a corseted top and Phaedra is wearing something a bit more below that station. I like the care that was taken with showing that in their costuming. Basically, the lesson here is you have more in common than you think you do. Like, for all of your differences and all of the competition, you both really care about Brianna and her child, and that's what you need to focus on, the commonalities versus the differences. They show that through secretly slipping sugar in their tea and all of that. It's a very fun scene to watch, but very interesting to see this dynamic going on with all four of these characters that are very much minor characters in the series. I'm not sure that it really like warranted an Outlander Untold scene. There are a couple of scenes within the Outlander Untold
saga that I'm just like, I don't really know if I care about that. This one was better than the last one that we talked about. I will say that.
So we're into the home stretch. We have finally reached the deleted scenes for the finale episode, Man of Worth. And this first scene is called You Will Not Be Alone. It is between Jocasta and Brianna. Oh my word, this is an amazing scene. This is another one that I had never seen before prior to this episode, but I'm so sad this was not in the locked cut of the episode. Maria Doyle Kennedy was amazing. Sophie Skelton was phenomenal in this scene. And you know, Sophie doesn't have a lot of super strong moments in season four. I wasn't overly impressed with her performances. To see this scene get cut where she was really good expressing her concern about being a mother, about giving birth to a rapist's child and hoping that she didn't see her attacker's face in her child. And then Jocasta getting the chance to offer that wisdom and advice that we saw in the last scene between her and Lizzie and Phaedra, but in a much more organic and motherly way. She says, "Monsters aren't born, monsters are made by misfortune and violence." And there's something so true about that and so honest. You can be born with tendencies one way or the other, but it's the experiences you have in life that shape the person that you become. I think that is very evident in Stephen Bonnet's character, especially. I really hope to get to actually do a villains series on this because I think it would be a phenomenal thing to kind of explore those characters and how they inform the series. Jocasta's right in saying that Brianna, if her child is in fact Stephen Bonnet's, that doesn't mean that it's doomed. That doesn't mean that it's born a monster. She can choose to be a force for good for her child, and the family that surrounds him will help him stay on the right path and make him a good person. I really liked this scene. It was a beautiful sentiment. It shows how much Brianna misses her parents, how much she fears for their safety. And I felt like this was such a good thing to include in the episode because we don't see that connection to her and her family, especially Jamie. And I said this in my episode analysis for Man of Worth, that I felt like for Brianna and Jamie, it was just a given that she would forgive him. And that was all that was really needed to be said on the subject. And I don't agree with that mindset at all. So I feel like by including this scene in the episode, we would have gotten a little bit more of the mending the fence flavor. And so we come to the final scene that's been deleted from season four. And it was just a brief snippet of Murta and Jocasta in bed together. And Ron Moore says in his introduction that this was cut basically because it felt like they were redoing the scene between Jocasta and Murta in bed that they ended up keeping in the locked cut. I do agree with that. I think we could have used a little bit of the scene in Phaedra coming up to the door and knocking and saying, "Brianna's in labor, you know, da 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 da." I think that would have been very nice to have because I felt like it was such a montage there at the end. Don't even get me started on the birth and my bitterness over that because that's not deleted or extended. But I felt like we could have used a little bit more of what was going on at River Run because the focus really was on what was going on with Jamie and Claire and Roger and Ian up at Shadow Lake. I understand why it was cut from the perspective of we already got enough of Murta and Jocasta, we don't need another scene. 100% agree with that choice, but I feel like something was left to be desired in the writing of this episode for sure, and this scene minutely helps fill the void. I think maybe if we had had that earlier scene between Jocasta and Brianna on the porch, we wouldn't have needed this scene at all. I guess it's probably to each their own on it for sure. That wraps up all of the deleted, extended, and extra scenes for season four. There's been some big news, some big earthquake in the Outlander verse, as it were, since the last time that I recorded an episode. So I wanted to take a moment to talk to you guys about it. So the first of it being that we are not getting part B of season seven until November of 2024. This was the news that about broke the fandom. Lots of people ticked off, lots of people canceling their Star subscriptions. Nobody had anything nice to say about this. And listen, I was not thrilled about it. I'm still
pretty pissed off about it, if I'm being honest. I don't think it was a smart move on Stars' part. I don't think any sort of argument that they can offer for their reasoning is sound. We will have waited 14 months for a new episode of Outlander by the time 7B comes along. You know, I defended the choice to have a break between 7A and 7B when the news first came out. And that was solely because I believed it was going to be a similar footprint to season one in only having a couple of months between part A and part B of the season. In which case, okay, that's not unheard of. I mean, look at what Bridgerton is doing with part one and part two of this new season coming out in May and June. That is a regular thing. I mean, they did it with The Crown over at Netflix. They have done it with different shows on all sorts of networks and channels. But I do have a problem with them promising 16-episode season. It's okay that season six got cut short because we're going to give you a longer, extended, extra season for season seven. There was all of this pomp and circumstance around this season because it was going to be supersized and it was going to be fantastic. And then they ended up shoving it on the back burner, locking the finished episodes in a vault somewhere and pretending that they don't have it ready to stream and say they're not giving it to us until November. I heard an argument that says, I've never seen such entitlement from the Outlander fandom as I have with this news and people pretending that they have a right to those episodes. And to that, I say, no, we're not entitled to it, but it's what's fair. We've waited without complaint for a long time, and to expect us to continue to pay for a service for an additional amount of time waiting on the show when other shows at Stars are getting shorter turnaround times. I don't watch any shows at Stars other than Outlander. You can spin all sorts of tales about, oh, well, the writer's strike impacted us. The actor's strike impacted us. Season 7 was completely filmed and in the editing processes before either the writer's strike or the acting strike started. So I understand that it probably did put some constraints on them because they were unable to do reshoots and additional dialogue recording and all of that with the actors and the writers on strike. However, those strikes do not compute into a delay of 9 months. They can't make all of these empty promises and expect people to continue to swallow it. They're really giving themselves the kiss of death over this. People are losing interest. People are becoming fed up. I think they've just taken it for granted all this time. The Outlander fans were so loyal that they would stick with it through thick and thin. And the majority of us will. At the same time, I'm like, I'm not gonna pay for something I'm not using. I don't have that much loyalty. That goes hand in hand with what we saw with the other announcement from last week, which was that season 8 has begun filming. There was virtually no movement in the fandom about it. Everybody was like, okay, cool. There was no excitement about it. And I don't think I have ever seen this happen where a headliner show for a streaming service has begun filming on another season with the previous season still not having been aired and not going to air for 8 more months. I don't get the point of even announcing that season 8 is filming. I can't get excited about season 8 and any of the potential filming pieces that we're going to get leaked when people are on location and little behind the scenes snippets that the cast and crew post on their Instagram stories and all of this. Like, I can't get excited about any of that because, like, I haven't even seen 7B yet. I just feel like they've gone about this all the wrong way. I don't honestly know for sure what it means for season 8. My gut is we're going to get 7B in November, which is a whole other thing because of the holidays and everything. So we probably won't get them even all at once. We'll probably get a couple of episodes, take a week off for Thanksgiving, get a couple more episodes, take a week off for Christmas, and then a couple more episodes. I just see this being such a long, drawn out, and inconvenient arrangement it's a numbers game for Starz, and there's probably a strategy somewhere in there, but I just don't feel like it's a good marketing or PR move. I have a feeling that part of the strategy of releasing it in November is because they're wanting to release Blood of My Blood at some point in 2025 and then release season 8 at some point in 2026 is my gut on it. I am appalled, honestly, to know that they are filming season 8 right now as we speak, and we may have to wait until 2026 to see any of it. I'm disgusted with Starz at this point. And I want to say to anybody who feels like listening to me at this point, there are a lot of conventions and stuff coming up. I will be attending LandCon in Europe. It's going to be in Paris. I know that's a very well-attended convention, and that is the first convention really since the news has broken about season 7B and season 8. Please don't take it out on the cast and the crew and the executive producers. This was not their decision. And I know I've seen the cast and crew and producers and writers. I've seen their social media feeds. I know that they're getting lit up in the comments. This was not their choice. People above their pay grade made this decision. They're just the voices. They're the ones that have to tell us. So be kind to them. They're trying their best to give us the best version of a show that we all love. It's okay to ask for answers, and they may at some point be able to give us something. I tend to believe that Starz is just going to gloss over it and try to make it seem like this never happened, but this is honestly the worst marketing and PR handling of a release that I have ever seen. I hope at some point we get answers for this. I just don't think we will. And as always, I will try to keep up with providing good Droughtlander content for you guys. I'm working on my own book right now. I'm working on the sequel to the book that I released a few years ago. So between that, I'm hoping to do a couple of more book clubs this summer, one on the Pearl Brooch and one on the Topaz Brooch. So that's books 9 and 10 of the Celtic Brooch series by Catherine Lowry Logan. And then we will also continue on doing the deleted, extended, and extra scene breakdowns for season 5 and season 6. So I hope that you'll stick with me through Droughtlander. It's going to be a lengthy one, but I'm happy to be here for you guys providing as much Outlander entertainment as I can. I will chat to you guys in a couple of weeks for the season 5 deleted scenes episode. Until then, you guys stay safe out there, and I'll chat at you later. Bye!